hometown morning.
KBOO is a proud co-sponsor of the Portland Folk Music Society 2018-19 concert season. The season finale features singer-songwriter Dave Stamey performing songs of the American West.
That's Dave Stamey on Friday, May 17th at the Reedwood Friends Church at 2901 Southeast Steel Street in Portland. Doors at 7, concert 7:30 p.m.
Cowboy poet Tom Swearingen will open, and the Portland Folk Music Society Concert Committee will announce the 2019-20 season.
For more information, go to kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Sweetgrass County Line, down where the Everstone flows, sunlit.
Good morning. You're listening to KBOO Portland. Coming up next is Art Focus. KBOO programming is made possible by KBOO member listeners and support from the Clinton Street Theater, open since 1915, featuring independent films, parties, and community events, located at 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. Full event schedule, tickets, showtimes, and more information online at cstpdx.com. And now, Art Focus.
Andy Warhol looks a scream. Hang him on my wall. Andy Warhol, silver screen. Can't tell them apart at all.
My name's Joseph Gallivan. You're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is Laura Mueller. She's the curator of art at the Portland Japanese Garden, and she's here to talk about Northern Lights, a ceramic show which runs through May 27th. Thanks for coming back to KBOO, Laura.
Hi, Joseph. Great to see you.
This show is it's the pottery of Hokkaido, which is a northern island of Japan. It's where Sapporo is, which is Portland's sister city.
Correct, right.
And just tell us a little bit about the region. We were just chatting, and I decided it was the Scotland of Japan because it's very sort of independent, and it was cut off. It wasn't really part of the Japanese nation. And then what happened?
Exactly. The history of Hokkaido, in terms of a Japanese, it's the northernmost of the four main islands of Japan, and it's really considered the frontier of Japan. When really in the 19th century is when Japanese started to move to Hokkaido and it became part of Japan. So it has sort of its own history, as long as in addition to being part of Japanese history as well. But it really was sort of the frontier. And so Japanese, it's a very recent history that it became part of Japan. Mm-hmm. And the capital of Hokkaido is Sapporo. And Sapporo has a sister city relationship with Portland. And we are celebrating the 60th year anniversary of that agreement.
Is that right?
Yes. And so this year is considered our year of Hokkaido. So that's one of the reasons why we chose to do the Northern Lights exhibition, which is a revisited exhibition. We did the initial Northern Lights ceramic show 11 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Did Diane have some of the same people over?
Yes, exactly. There are some of the artists that if you went to the first show, you'd be able to see some of the same artists that presented again this year that were in the original show as well.
So what people will see here is what happens when the Japanese kind of sent their own people to Hokkaido, and they brought their ceramic traditions with them, which were very kind of refined and very rule-bound. And they went to this region, and then they started just doing their own thing. And you get this crazy variety of styles and just people doing kind of playing with their freedom, I think.
Exactly. And you really see that. I mean, I think if there's a few words to describe the exhibition, it would be unexpected, exciting, and diverse. And part of that is it was in the 19th century that Japanese really started to populate Hokkaido. And as I mentioned, there's this really long history of ceramic production in Japan, and there's these great centers of ceramic production in Kyoto or Bizen. And what happened is people from these areas moved there, brought their traditions with them, but because they weren't bound by any long-held traditions, they were able to really explore and also appropriate those traditions or those modes of production to Hokkaido. So using Hokkaido clay, using things in Hokkaido for the glazes. And it just gave them this whole new freedom. And so you'll see that when you go to the show, that there's no one tradition that you can define as Hokkaido other than it's diverse and it's really free. And so I think people will be really surprised when you think of a ceramic show, you think of beautiful plates and bowls and cups. This is nothing like that. Most of these works are extremely, they're sculptural. They're mm-hmm. not actually, they're not utilitarian.
Right. They don't have, they're not all bowls and cups. They're not, they're not being used. They're like, I'm going to build this incredible shape, abstract shape, and just see what happens.
Exactly. And another thing I found really striking about these works is, when you're working on this exhibition for at least a year ahead of time, you come into this and you're used to looking at all these small images of the works. And then when you unpack them, it's this huge surprise, because you'll notice one thing when you walk into the gallery space, they're all extremely large scale, which is really unusual for Japan. Mm-hmm. And I think some of that has to do with this freedom that they have in Hokkaido. It's the frontier. The concept of space is much different than in the confines of the city centers of Tokyo or Kyoto. It's wide open. And I think that comes through in the works, as in these, that the artists were able to create these really large scale works, which are really exciting.
Mm-hmm. Well, one thing, there's a bowl by Hideki Takai, which really... I just found it amazing. So you go in the Pavilion Gallery, which is the big one next to the Zen Garden.
Right, the flat garden, exactly,
yeah.
Right.
That's where most of the stuff is.
Well, the exhibition is, it's in two galleries. So a part of the gallery with the wider membership is in the Tanabe Gallery, and that's in the new Kengo Kuma building. And that is a selection of 30 tea bowls of the wider membership. So 30 members from the Hokkaido Potter Society all created tea bowls for that. And so it's really wonderful. They're all the same, obviously the same form, but it really has this wonderful exploration of form, material, glazes. So it really shows each individual artist's personal style. And then complementing that is the masterworks part of the exhibition, which is in the Pavilion Gallery. And that's 21 masterworks from the group. And that's a self juried selection of masterworks from the membership.
Mm-hmm. This Hideki Takai bowl is... this very pale, very low, shallow bowl.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just amazed how thin the porcelain was. And it just made me think again, you know, how in ceramics, it's heavy. You can't really build very big because it starts falling apart. Mm-hmm. And I was trying to think back to school, you know, where we made slip casting.
Mm-hmm.
So you could pour slip in a mold, let it dry, and that way you got a kind of shallow, thin bowl,
right,
when you popped it out. And is this the technique for that?
It is not. In fact, Takai-san was here and he did a demonstration on Saturday of the opening weekend, and he actually uses the wheel for that. And so, like,
really?
You said, it's so thin. He actually uses the wheel to create that bowl, which is amazing, right? Very carefully, I guess. And they often joke about how many times they have to go at it, like how many times they try to get the one piece that actually holds up and it works.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, that's one of those pieces. It really is amazing because it's so thin and so beautiful and so refined. And with the beautiful glaze, which is actually a celadon glaze, which is a really light bluish green hue to it in the right light, but really an amazing work.
Mm-hmm. So it must have been incredible when you unpack these pieces, because they, you know, they flew them, is that right?
Yeah, well, it's all air freight, right.
Air freight from Japan, and they're so delicate, some
mm-hmm.
of them. It must have been quite difficult.
It is quite difficult. The wonderful thing about Japanese packing is an art form in itself.
Right. Oh, they
and
take their present packing to greater lengths.
It's amazing. I mean, really, people would be shocked if they saw the amazing way that they pack these things. And they go in, you know, they pack all of these pieces in these large wooden crates, and every piece arrives safely, no chips, no broken pieces at all. And it's really amazing. And when you see the actual packing, it is an art form in itself. And I'm not saying that to be funny at all. I mean, it really is an amazing feat, the way that they can pack these safe to
what
make
are
them
they using?
The right safe thing.
Bubble wrap and DHL?
It's a lot of it is styrofoam, you know, specifically cut, custom cut for each individual piece. And it's boxes within boxes, of course, as well. So one is packed very securely in one box, and then those boxes are fit very neatly, almost like, you know, it's almost like a puzzle the way the boxes fit into the larger crate, the wooden crates as well. But they do it really, really well, and they're really secure, and they make it safely.
The postcard image of the show, to me, it looks like a fingernail. It's oval top, but with a flat bottom. What's this piece called?
This is called Sun Pillar, and this is by Hiroshi Nakamura, who is the current president of the Hokkaido Potter Society. And his inspiration was an early cold Hokkaido morning with snow in the atmosphere. And as the sun rises, you get this amazing reflection in the crystals and the snow and create sort of like a sun pillar. And so he used, on the surface of this piece, he used spray glazes to create this shading that recreates this visual form of the sun's reflection on the snow in a cold Hokkaido morning.
Mm-hmm. There's another amazing piece. It's by Shishiro Koyama, and it's a kind of a filigree. I don't know how it stood up before it was glazed, but it's a bowl that seems to be disintegrating, and it turns into this very irregular pattern. It looks like machine-created filigree.
Right.
And then the very top, the rim of the bowl is very uneven.
Right, almost looks like it's broken off. Exactly.
Yeah, but it's gray. It's a sort of gunmetal gray.
Mm-hmm.
It's just an amazing
piece. It's an amazing piece. And that's another one that's shockingly large scale. You know, it's about 3 feet tall.
Oh, yeah.
And it's so when you think about how he created it. So originally, the vessel was created on the wheel, and then he would let it dry. And then he goes back and he cuts out the sort of lattice work that you see.
Mm-hmm.
And as you can imagine on that scale, how difficult that would be to do that. And again, he talked about how many fails he had before he made one that actually worked, because
really?
It was so complicated to do. And if you look at just the thinness of that vessel too, and the scale of it is really quite astounding that he was able to create that.
Mm-hmm. Do you know, was he using like a power tool or a scalpel?
It was sort of like a Zacto knife. It's a blade that he used to go in, and then after he throwing it on the wheel, mm-hmm. letting it dry, and then it becomes almost like a really tough leather, and then using a blade was able to cut out these pieces.
So he'd put a stencil on it?
Right.
So,
he drew out the design on the surface and then would cut it out.
And
it took hours and hours.
The shape, though, that he's using is a sort of... three-pointed, I don't know what you'd call that shape.
It's as
like
specific,
a Y.
Right, it's a specific design that was, it's an abstracted tortoise shell design is what they call it. And so that's exactly the pattern he was going for. It's a very specific, it's called Bishamon, and it's a tortoise shell pattern.
Really? Is that a traditional pattern?
It is, yes. Used in textiles.
Ceramics or in all sorts of crafts?
It's in all sorts of crafts in Japan. It's a very traditional pattern in Japanese. You see it in textiles and on the surface of ceramics.
Because mm-hmm. to me, it looks like, you know, electronics, like a chip design, mm-hmm. a circuitry, that kind of thing.
Right, exactly. I mean, it definitely is this, you know, it's an abstracted version of nature, if you will.
Okay, so he's sort of regularized it.
Exactly, right. But it is based on, it's called the tortoise shell pattern.
What's that in Japanese, do you know?
Bishamon is the term.
Hatsue Kimura did a, it's like a woman's torso.
Right.
But blue. And it's, again, you can see it's based on a female form, but it's also abstract.
Right. It is definitely an abstracted female form, but it has this amazing line to it. Again, this is a really large scale work, at least like 3 feet tall vessel. And the vessel, when you look at it, it looks almost as like an abstracted shape. But when you see it in the right, you know, when you kind of go around it, it's really something to view in in the 360, as you turn around it, you can see it definitely is based on the female form. And it has this, the surface of it is this beautiful greenish blue glaze that's just really thick. And so it just gives it this amazing feel and look to it that's really quite astounding.
Mm-hmm. My name's Joseph Gallivan. You're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is Laura Mueller. She's the curator of art at the Portland Japanese Garden. She's talking about Northern Lights, which is works from the Hokkaido Pottery Society, and this show ends on May 27th. There's another amazing piece. It stands out to me from all the others because the others seem to be abstract shapes or they're kind of vessel-based. But then there's this one, it's flat on the kind of platform.
Right.
And it looks like a doll or a baby that's been disassembled and each body part is in its own little box.
Exactly.
And it kind of looks like a sort of exploded coffin. And who's that by?
That's by an artist, Shugo Mori. And it's a really interesting story. The kiln in which that piece, it actually was a doll. He was creating a ceramic doll, it's the pieces of a doll. And the kiln, when it was being fired, was destroyed. And then he was able to recover these pieces. And for him, it was this sort of way to memorialize this doll that he had been creating in the destruction and trying to save it. And then he created these little sections for it, almost like you said, like a coffin for each individual piece. So it is really a standout piece because it's kind of it's so different from there's no utilitarian, you know, shape that it's coming from, or the tradition of it is really unusual.
Do you know what happened to his kiln?
It was a natural disaster, and it was in it's an untitled piece from 2011, which is the year of the tsunami, the earthquake and tsunami that hit Japan. And so that was what destroyed his kiln.
Mm-hmm. So he kind of, it was, the doll was done, but he just had to gather the parts.
Well, the doll was being fired. And so, yeah. During the process of it being fired is when the disaster struck and his kiln was destroyed. And so he had to sort of dig through the rubble to recover these pieces. And he recovered the pieces and wanted to sort of memorialize that event. Mm-hmm. And so did it through this work of art.
Right. Tell us a bit about this process of sending people to the north. What was it all about? Was it part of a bigger project by the Japanese government?
It was. In Hokkaido is the northernmost island, and like I said, it was the frontier, and it wasn't settled by Japanese traditionally. There was an indigenous people, the Ainu, which is a very specific race of people. It's not Japanese. And so when Japan purchased Hokkaido, they sent people there to populate it and to sort of colonize it, to make it their own. Mm-hmm. With the indigenous Ainu that were already there.
So it was just like the American West. It was like they're native people,
little bit,
but
exactly.
They just kind of steamrolled them.
They were trying to make it part of Japan, and the best way to do that was to assimilate them into the Japanese culture and society.
So did they bring all sorts of things, not just pottery, I mean ceramics, were they coming with all the southern
exactly
kind
all
of
sorts of industry were moved in, because it was the frontier. There were all sorts of natural resources and things that Japan really needed, and so they brought in industry to make use of all of those natural resources for all of Japan.
So do you think there could be a similar show just based on textiles, or could there be another?
Well, it's
show?
Really interesting you say that, Joseph, because our next show, Forested Dreams, which is coming up in June, is a show that will be bringing together wood carving traditions of the native Ainu along with wood carving traditions of the Pacific Northwest Native peoples. And so there'll be this wonderful show that shows all of the similarities of the two Native cultures together in one form of creative expression in wood carving.
Mm-hmm. And who's put that show together?
Well, we've put that together. It's called Forest of Dreams, and it's co-curated. We brought two curators in, Sachiko Matsuyama from Japan, and then we've got Dina Dart here in Oregon, who is a native American curator.
Mm-hmm. When does that begin?
That begins in June. The opening will be June 8th.
Okay.
To the public.
And then, Northern Lights, do they have the Northern Lights in the Sapporo, Kyoto, Hokkaido region?
They don't. Northern
not
Lights.
That far
it's not north. That far north. Okay. No, it's not. It's just that it is it is of the northernmost island of Japan, as well as that because it is one of the colder areas of Japan and has a lot of snow in the winter and is very cold. There is that wonderful sort of poetic reference to the Northern Lights of Hokkaido.
So this show, there's the pavilion, which has all the big pieces. And then, like you said, the tea bowls are indoors in the...
In the Tanabe Kengo Gallery, right, in the Kengokuma building, exactly, yeah. Next to the gift shop.
Behind glass,
yes,
so
exactly.
So everyone was kind of riffing on the tea bowl?
Right,
they,
I mean, one of the...
These are very serious. I always make my tea bowls like this. Were they one-offs just to kind of show off?
I think you probably had a little bit of both, but it really shows the breadth of the creative expression of the society as a whole, because they're really diverse. But they wanted to use a very traditional, one of the most traditional forms of ceramic production in Japan, and show how they can use that traditional form, but yet make it their own and put their own sort of personal take on that very traditional form.
Mm-hmm. If you went to Muji, do you think they would have tea bowls?
They would have tea. In fact, I know they have tea bowls. Yes, so, they do.
And the form is the same, right?
It's the same form, right. Exactly. Oftentimes they're in sort of a lacquer, almost a plastic type material. Sometimes they won't be necessarily of ceramic production at this point because they're mass produced. But definitely you'll have that sort of tea bowl or a very similar shape as a rice bowl that they would also use.
The Hokkaido Pottery Society, a lot of those people actually came over. There were like 17 artists at
exactly.
the opening.
We had 17 artists and then their...
And they brought
And people. They brought their own. So their and entourage, right. So the 17 artists and their...
Over.
About 30 people came over, exactly.
And what did they get up to while they were here? They were hosted, right?
Yeah, it was really interesting. You know, there's this long-term relationship between the Hokkaido Pottery Society and the Oregon Potters Association, and so this is sort of a reunion for them. It was really actually quite emotional. There were some different dinners and things for the group. As you said, there were 17 artists with their entourage. About 30 came over, and a lot of them stayed at homestays with members of the Oregon Potters Association. And so there were dinners, and also there was the Oregon Potters Association showcase going on as well. So it was really sort of a celebration of ceramic production in Hokkaido and in Oregon. And mm-hmm. so there was this wonderful exchange. It was very emotional. There were lots of tears and hugs and warm embraces and reunions. It was really a beautiful thing to see.
Mm-hmm. You've been in the job a few months, so you've been working through the things your predecessor programmed. What's coming up towards the end of the year?
We've got some really exciting projects coming up. Our final exhibition of the year, Noritaka Tatehana, Refashioning Beauty, will start and open in November. And he's a contemporary artist. And a lot of people probably don't know his name, but they would probably know some of the things that he's been most celebrated for. He was the creator, the craftsman of the very dramatic and dynamic heelless shoes that Lady Gaga has worn many times on the red carpet.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really what brought him to the forefront. But he first and foremost is a fine artist, a contemporary fine artist. And so this show really, it will be reflecting on his work with the heelless shoes, but also be looking at many of his more sculptural works of contemporary Japanese society as well. But he's really interesting because he draws as inspiration Japanese tradition. Even the heelless shoes actually were based on models of the high geta that were worn by high-ranking courtesans in the Edo period in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
So he always looks for his base of inspiration, traditional Japanese craft and art, to create contemporary works.
And what's his medium? If you saw a room full of his sculptures, what are they made of?
It's everything. Because, he also uses a lot of traditional Japanese crafts. So he actually will employ, he designs things and then will employ traditional craftsmen, so lacquer producers in Kyoto, or he's actually doing some pieces that actually have blades, traditional Japanese sword blades, katana are what they're called, and he does contemporary versions of these swords. So, but he uses actually, you know, the best of craftsmen in Japan right now to create his works.
That's amazing. When is that?
That'll be opening up in November. Again, that's Noritaka Tatehana, Refashioning Beauty.
Ooh, get on his Instagram.
Yeah, exactly. He's really dynamic. And because he has a following like of Lady Gaga, you know, there's a lot of people that are really interested in his work because he really is at the forefront of sort of contemporary society.
Mm-hmm. My name's Joseph Gallivan. You've been listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week was Laura Mueller. She's the curator of art at the Portland Japanese Garden. She was talking about Northern Lights, a show of the Hokkaido Pottery Society, which runs through May 27th. Thanks for coming back to KBOO.
Thanks so much, Joseph.
Andy Warhol looks a scream.